Welcome to the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews Podcast. This is episode 50 on Tuesday the 15th of March 2016. We are glad you're listening, folks. My name is Wayne.
And my name is Paul. Welcome to the show where we review and rank order movies and TV shows so you don't have to make those difficult decisions about what to watch next. Wayne, what are we doing for this monumental 50th episode?
50th episode. We are reviewing 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is an interesting kind of movie. We'll get into that. Mm-hmm. And right after that, we're going to count down our top 10 single location films.
Right. Before we get to this episode, then, let's rewind 1 week and talk a little bit about our last show.
Yes, we counted down our top 10 crime thrillers.
That we did. Now, you picked, according to Twitter, a slightly controversial choice. Swordfish, starring John Travolta, Hugh Jackman, and Halle Berry, directed by Dominic Cera?
Cena?
Yep. Okay. Now, the crossover podcast at NPS6 took particular umbrage at this.
Really?
They said, Swordfish isn't even a crime drama. It is a generic action flick.
I disagree like a motherfucker. They were stealing money, albeit online. They were, like, invoking terrorists. This is all crime, man. It's all crime. Are you saying it's more action than crime? Is that what they're saying?
That's what they're saying.
Okay.
And then they added, if Swordfish qualifies for that category, then so does The Fast and Furious.
I kind of agree with that. It's just that they wouldn't appear on my list. Mm. No, you know what? No. Yeah, okay, yeah, you know. I think you've referred
to that film as the most quotable film of all time.
Damn straight.
Yeah, okay. Faces and Aces LV podcast asked, does Goodfellas count as a crime thriller?
Well, it would if it wasn't such a gangster movie.
Yeah, and I think we did cover that on the show. We basically said, look, we're excluding that because otherwise our two lists might be too similar. We did do the best gangster films way back around episode 16 or so, so we didn't just want to recover the same ground.
That's it.
Then we should also mention Mark Ellis, which is at M. Ray Guns, G-U-N-Z, of the So Wizard podcast, a show that we oft referred to on the show, on our show. Mark Ellis had reviewed 999, and he had said it was a particularly good film.
Oh, really?
He did, and whereas we gave it three, I gave it 2.5.
Mm.
We went back and forth a little bit about that. Sounds like a really nice guy. And then he basically concluded with this. I probably shouldn't have watched Gods of Egypt right before 999. That may have caused me to overly praise the latter.
Yes, it's all about context, people.
Yeah. What the Fork Show at my WTF show said the first Fast and Furious, a.k.a. Point Break 2. I'd never thought about that before. It's kind of right. Yeah. Couldn't be considered. It was good for what it was, he said.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And lastly, Rad Dad Chad also weighed in. Not so much about the swordfish debate, but he said he loved the new ep. Thank you very much. Good sir, and he asked for our thoughts on The Replacement Killers and The Long Kiss Goodnight.
The Replacement Killers are the Chow Yun-Fat one. Yep. Okay, I'm trying to remember what I thought about that movie. I think I didn't mind it, but I didn't place it anywhere near something I would actually remember. Mira Sorvino from memory?
Yep, that's it.
Okay. I think I was expecting a lot from that movie because it was so interesting looking and that kind of shit. I remember being kind of ultimately a bit disappointed. So I don't think if I had to give that a rating, it would get to like 2.5.
Okay. And what about then The Long Kiss Goodnight?
The Long Kiss Goodnight,
Sam
I liked a lot.
Jay and Gina Davis.
Yeah, I like that a lot better. I mean, Rennie Harlan, yeah?
Yes.
Rennie Harlan movie?
Harlan.
Yeah, no, I like that a lot better. That was a really interesting kind of fun ride. It was pure action.
In other words, what you just said there is it's not so much a crime thriller as it is an action film for you.
Oh, for me it is, yeah. Yep. Action film,
okay.
Sure.
No worries. And lastly, the Open All Powers podcast, great show, at Open All Powers on Twitter, said they love the Countdown dudes. They love Flatterall as well, and Swordfish is a great Travolta villain role. So you got a little bit of love there from them.
Good. Thank you. It's kind of getting ripped online. All right, good.
Especially we don't know about it until I bring it to the podcast next recording. All right, well, there we go. That's our feedback from last week. Thanks to everyone who wrote in to let us know what they thought. Let's move on then to a quick promo for a hashtag Pod and Family podcast, a movement of podcasts that come together to promote one another and hopefully expand all our listenerships. Let's hear from them and then talk about 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Hey, welcome to the Classy Little Podcast promo.
We're your hosts. I'm Emily.
And I'm James.
What wine are we drinking this week?
It's just a promo, so I thought we didn't have to drink a bottle of wine.
Well, let's open a bottle just in case.
Okay. Did you bring a cheese to accompany it too?
What cheese pairs well with a promo? Promalone? Promazon? Pro-mozzarella?
Oh, goodness. Well, as you might have guessed, every week we have wine and cheese on our show.
And we pick a different topic for each episode. We find out interesting and quirky aspects of it, including the history, the etiquette,
the controversies and injustices surrounding them.
Okay, we know, James. Everything is terrible. How would you describe it?
It's fun and informative, but not too informative or didactic.
Yeah, but we don't use words like didactic.
No, never. Anyway, you could find us at classylittlepodcast.com.
Or on your podcatcher of choice every Wine Wednesday.
Cheers!
Cheers!
Regulars, this might be wondering where our regular segments are, and the answer to that is very simple. We've already spent a good proportion of today recording with the Epic Film Guys on their episode reviewing Superman Returns and the Nolanverse Batman trilogy.
Love the Epic Film Guys.
Oh, fantastic podcast. If you're not listening, please get on over and listen to their show, tune in. They're a fantastic podcast. Nick and Justin invited us on, and the four of us and their friend Brentley sat around and had a good two and a half hour conversation about those particular films. It was a lot of fun. They were very late on their Saturday night, so they'd had a few drinks, which just made it all the funner. Still, thanks so much to them for inviting us, and do check us out. More importantly, do check them out on that episode and their previous episodes. So, we're just going to launch straight into our review today of 10 Cloverfield Lane. It's a film directed by Dan Trachtenberg, his first effort in the directorial chair, starring Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who is, of course, Ramona Flowers from Scott Pilgrim versus the World, John Goodman, and John Gallagher Jr. And there's one other person in the film who I do not have her name in the cast, because there are literally four people in this film.
Yeah.
Which has to be some kind of record for a wide-release Hollywood movie.
Yeah.
It was made for $15 million, and it is considered, quote-unquote, a spiritual successor to the film Cloverfield, which was a found footage film about the destruction of New York by some huge monster slash creature.
This is such a difficult movie to review because, let me tell you, speaking of Epic Film Guys, we had a little chat, like a WhatsApp chat before, and Nick had seen 10 Cloverfield Lane, and he said, I don't know what to think about this movie right after he watched it. And that's exactly how I felt. Paul and I saw this together. We walked out of the film and we were kind of stunned silence. We were like going, well, I don't know what to think. And on the drive home, I was thinking to myself, first of all, did I like this movie or not?
Yes. That's a legitimate question to ask yourself.
Yeah, and I honestly didn't know. And what I came to after about 15 minutes of thinking about it was that, okay, well, I definitely don't feel like I wasted my time.
Yep.
And so on that sort of criteria, I did like it. Having thought about it for a day or so until now, what I can tell you about this movie is that if you have heard nothing about it, don't hear anything about it.
Keep it that way.
Someone wants to talk to you, just politely kick them in the nuts. Just say nothing. The less you know about this movie walking in, the more you're going
to
enjoy it.
Which basically means that if you haven't seen the film yet, but you want to, stop.
Well, here's the thing. We're going to be very, very... I'm going to be very, very, like, careful with my review. I'm not going to give you a lot of specifics. I'm going to tell you...
I kind of feel like... I'm going to jump in, sorry.
Yeah?
I kind of feel like we have to talk about the end.
No!
But not until we very specifically talk about, now we're going to talk about it. So we will very carefully let you know with good amount of time.
Yeah, you can hit the 15 button if you want.
Yeah, fast forward. And then when you hear music or a promo for the next segment, then you can start listening again.
Okay, all right.
So we'll not spoil anything in this particular part of the film. Part of the podcast.
Yeah, so you can listen on with a carefree abandon. Okay, good things about this movie.
Well, before we get there, please. Can I jump in with the other vital statistics? Now, this was produced by Bad Robot Productions, which is J.J. Abrams, which needs no further introduction, and Leslie Weber. It was written by Josh Campbell, Matt Stukin, and Damien Chazelle. Now, people who are very interested in last year's Oscars will know Damien Chazelle as the writer-director of Whiplash. Now, he came in as a screenplay consultant. Seems like he came in and had a second go at the draft.
Right.
This was originally written as a standalone film called The Cellar.
Okay.
Right. But it was optioned by and owned by Bad Robot Productions, and then they've decided to turn it into this spiritual successor to Cloverfield. So it was not originally conceived or written as a film taking place in or around this universe, depending on the way you look at it.
Right. I actually think that actually makes a lot of sense, although I do like what they've done with this in relation to making it a Cloverfield spiritual sequel. The best things about this movie...
Tell us what you liked about it.
Is first of all, John Goodman gives a real tricky performance. He is absolutely the thing to watch about this movie.
Mm-hmm.
Keeps you guessing a lot longer than probably a lot of extras would. You're never quite sure exactly what his deal is. The movie...
Should we mention what the plot is?
Okay, well, very basically, well, the plot is Mary Elizabeth Winstead is driving along after having broken up with her boyfriend. She then has some kind of car accident and wakes up. You can probably tell this from the trailer, so it's not a big thing.
No.
She wakes up in what appears to be sort of an underground sort of bunker.
Yep.
And she's not sure what the deal is, but John Goodman's there. He's obviously the owner of the bunker. There's one other guy there. She's not quite sure what his deal is. But it goes from there, basically. The ideology is that there's something out there. John Goodman posits that there's some kind of war that's happened, some kind of chemical agent. He doesn't know what's going on, but he says, we got to stay down here for a goodly amount of time, to the tune of a year or 2 years. And she is wondering what the fuck is going on, because as far as she knows, everything was fine. She had a car accident, and now she's here. So that's pretty much the proviso of the movie, and things develop from there.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, look, I mentioned there were four people in the film. There are four actors in the film. There are five people, including their voices. And apparently, Bradley Cooper voiced her boyfriend.
Oh, really?
Who rings her begs her to return in the very early parts of the film. So, we have five paid actors in this whole film, which I think in and of itself is quite startling for, like I said, a widespread release.
Totally.
This is a film which requires a certain amount of patience. That's what I would say.
I agree. It's very much a slow burn, and I typically don't respond well to that.
Mm-hmm.
But with this one, yeah, you do need a little bit of patience, but not so much that you have to extend yourself in order to like it. I was sitting there maybe at one, maybe two or three points of the movie going, something needs to happen now, and then typically it does happen. So you do need to be a little bit patient with it, so make sure you're in a good mood when you see this movie.
Probably, if you had to put this into a genre,
mm-hmm.
thriller is
certainly,
where it would land.
Certainly.
Although certain things happen later, maybe, that might challenge that. But yes, this is a thriller through and through. And you are following Michelle, Mary Elizabeth Winstead.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all entirely from her point of view. So John Goodman is the person who says, I have saved you.
Yep.
Everybody is dead.
Yep.
And then there's a third man who's part of this triumvirate, I guess you would call it, who has forced his way into the bunker. And he kind of corroborates what John Goodman or Howard has to say. So, yep.
You're not quite sure what his deal is.
Yeah, he seems a little off as well initially.
Right.
And she's trying to work out her place amongst these three. And there are some pretty tense scenes, including a pretty great scene at the dinner table.
Yep.
Where Absolutely. You are working out the way this dynamic is going to go between these three people
mm-hmm.
and what it might mean. And then the film progresses from there. Look, honestly, I think this film is better in retrospect than it is watching it.
Really? It's an interesting point.
So the more I thought about it, the more I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like that.
Initially, as you said, we didn't really talk about it. We did see it together. We walked out of the cinema and I was thinking to myself, eh. And I would say 30 minutes before the end, I was like, yeah, this is barely passing muster. John Goodman is totally saving this movie.
Yes. No, he's the strongest
thing
about this.
Otherwise, it's like such a generic kind of whatever thriller.
What I would say about this movie is that I now think that I like it, and I do like it, but I would be very careful who I recommend it to.
That's a good point. Yep.
You know? And I don't typically like these types of necessarily, I don't know, I don't want to call it horror or anything like that, but it's a thriller movie, but it's not what I expected.
I don't really know what I expected, and that's partly because the marketing of this film was so guerrilla sort of viral.
Beautiful.
They did not put... Look, this budget, as I said, was $15 million. There's no way they spent $15 million on this budget, on this marketing budget.
No.
Which is the typical kind of case for big blockbuster films. Times the budget by two.
Yeah.
Not with this movie. It's not got a single mention anywhere in Australia here that I can think of.
Yeah.
The trailer only launched about 7-8 weeks ago.
Yep.
To no fanfare. And then people go, holy shit, there's a sequel to Cloverfield?
Yep.
There was a couple of films like The Other Side of the Door or something, which is a genre kind of horror film, which was slated for release this weekend, that subsequently got bumped a week forward and dropped from, I don't know if it was 3,000 cinemas down to 1,000, because I just went, eh. So other studios were caught on the hop as well. So it's quite interesting. And this is kind of the way that Cloverfield, the original one, was marketed too. It was just these weirdly obscure, ambiguous trailers. And what's this about? Don't really know. Mm. And that did gangbusters. That made 40 million its opening weekend.
Yeah.
This is not going to do as well.
No.
It's made about 9 million its opening day. It's going to do well. It's going to make its money back well back before the end of this opening weekend. So it's a huge hit. Mm-hmm. And another big tick for Bad Robot Productions.
Yep.
Can't fault that particular aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I think I feel a little bit shortchanged by the word Cloverfield.
Okay, well, I think to say any more, we would have to get into our spoilers.
Is there anything else you want to say about...
The only other thing I want to say is that the opening credits are very Saul Bass-like in the way it is. So this whole thing has a bit of... I don't want to say noir wrongly, but it's got a very old-worldy kind of feel about it, which I kind of liked.
The opening credits are just smash edits.
No, but the letters have like...
Oh, that bit. Oh, so you mean the very... Okay, so the very, very opening...
Yeah, yeah, I'm sort of like shot credit film, credits, and yeah. And then... I don't know, for some reason it sort of aesthetically pleased me, so... That's the only other thing, really. Anything else would be knowing too much about this movie.
John Gallagher Jr., probably should mention, is the third member of this triumvirate.
The bearded guy, yeah.
The bearded guy.
Got it.
And he's good. Like, honestly, yeah. I think if you want to really talk about what's strong about this film, all three lead performances, no one is weak.
No, that's
John
true.
Goodman steals the show, yep. No doubt, but the other two are very good as well. I did not at any point go, eh. What I did go, and this is a criticism I can talk about the film,
mm-hmm.
The whole film is based around Michelle trying to work out why she's there. Is the threat outside that she's told about real? And if it's real, what she should do about that.
Right.
Right? Her and John Gallagher Jr.'s character spend a lot of time talking about John Goodman's character, Howard.
Yep.
This is a tiny little fucking bunker.
Yep.
It's, I would suggest, no bigger than a house.
Definitely not.
Yet, they carry on through this film like no one can hear them so often.
I mean, yeah.
No one will walk in on what they're doing so often.
The deal is made sort of with you that these guys are like kind of talking in this room secretly, and then, I know. There is a little bit of that. I'm willing to let that go.
You know what? And I know this would have sacrificed realism, but it needed to be a bigger bunker they were in. There needed to be something where... You could hear someone coming a mile away for whatever reason, and that would have been fine, but they didn't establish that. And so it took away some of the tension for me, because, like, well, you're not even looking over your fucking shoulder.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And Howard could come walking, and I know he's a big man, but he could come walking at any time, and you would have no fucking clue. Which, of course, eventually happens.
Yeah.
But,
well, yeah.
By that stage, it's like,
okay, no, fair enough, there is that.
Well, should we give final scores and then go into spoilers?
Yeah, okay.
All right, why don't you go first? Tell us what you think.
Sure. I liked it enough. This is a 3 stars out of 5.
Exactly what I would give it. 3 stars, but initially I was hovering around 2, 2.5, until the end of the film. So, turn off now. Don't want to know anything more about...
Spoilers about to happen.
10 Cloverfield Lane, we're going to do spoilers for the next 3, 4, 5 minutes. Fast forward until you hit music or a promo. So,
if you're still watching, go on.
This film turns on its ass, right? Yeah, if you're still listening to us, it means you've seen the film or you have no interest in seeing it whatsoever.
Yes. The ending of this film, here's what I really think about this, okay? The movie is played, like you say, a psychological thriller,
yep.
And it's all the way through. And what is really great about this movie is that it's one type of movie, then at the very last minute, it's another kind of movie.
I said half an hour generously. It's the last 15 minutes.
It is.
Max.
It is.
Maybe 10.
Right, because the whole time, you're wondering what the story is, and you're wondering with her, and you find out at the same time as her what's going on, but you still have a lot of, like, you're like, yeah, but what does this mean? And then it's basically layer upon layer upon layer of different threats. Because, first of all, she doesn't know if George Goodman's good or bad.
Yep.
Then he kind of seems to be okay, but you know he's a bit off. But then you don't know where the bearded guy is, whether he's all he seems as well. For me, anyway, I'm like, he says he's this, but is he?
I never felt as threatened.
Not as much as John. No. He was probably the good guy in there, but you know, because you're wondering about John, you're wondering about him.
A little bit.
A little bit.
Because his story was meant to corroborate Howard's story. Yes.
Yes.
Sorry, John Goodman's.
Yeah, that's right. And then you have this other, like, layer bit where you're like, okay, so John Goodman might just be one of those guys who's a little bit off, but he's essentially a good man.
A nice guy, yeah.
Yeah. But then you find out, perhaps, that he might be a murderer.
There's some question about how he's behaved and what's happened in that bunker before. But let's not spoil that.
No, we won't spoil that at all.
Let's just go straight to the end of the film.
Right.
She has reason to leave the bunker.
Right.
Right. And she's had a reason to leave the whole way along, but now she finally breaks out. Now, up until this point, what the fuck has this got to do with Cloverfield?
Exactly. And in fact, to be honest with you, you could argue it has nothing to do with Cloverfield.
Cloverfield is a movie about a huge monster, Godzilla-like monster, rampaging through New York.
Yep.
And a group of friends trying to escape from New York Island and basically being killed off one step at a time along the way.
Yep.
Right?
And you have no idea where it came from.
No idea where it came from. Now, in this film, we get fantastical creatures slash aliens that suddenly pop out of nowhere in this last.
Well,
ten...
that this is it.
Well, like, it's not out of nowhere. That's the wrong.
No. What I mean, I think before we do that, she finally does get out of the bunker and she comes out and you're like, okay, what's going on? And she's got a little, she's made a sort of a makeshift gas mask and that sort of thing. So she's not sure if there was chemical agents killing everyone. She's had reason to believe there is something like that going on. She finally figures out, oh shit, it's actually really nicely lit. It's bright. It's daytime. For about 3 seconds, and then
that was weird.
It turns nighttime literally like instantaneously, which is whatever.
She gets out, and the sun's at about 4 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah,
sort of height.
Within like 3 minutes, it's like almost
it's
nighttime.
It's like, oh, so, come on, guys! Just,
right, that was
why not just get it to come out in the dark?
Because
everything was normal.
Yeah, no, they needed a happy moment, which turns out, and nothing's happier than a blue sky and a field. So it couldn't be dusk.
It should have been dusk.
That's not happy enough, though. So that's what happened. So she comes out, and she's like, okay, well, hey, everything's all right. Shit, I don't know why we were locked up in there. She gets the inclination that everything's fine. Then you find out it's a fucking alien movie.
Yep.
And there's
this weird alien
big,
craft.
Huge alien craft coming around, which is sort of organic. Yep. And then she's like, what the fuck is it? And she even says, are you shitting me? Or you got to be kidding me, or something like that, right?
And look, we won't spoil it past that point. That was what we wanted to hold on. Now, to me, how do you read this as part of the Cloverfield universe?
Okay. The only thing that actually connects, potentially, the last movie to this one is the address of where they are. But, thematically, what actually connects them is that if the first movie monster was an alien...
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Maybe that was,
then
it was
this
dumped
maybe
in on
what,
the big
yeah,
cities.
But
yeah.
It's so such a known event. It's kind of not important that may be a possibility or not. What's important about this movie is that for the whole movie, it's one kind of movie, and at the very end, it's another fucking movie.
Yep.
And I appreciate that. Yep. That's not something you would normally... Hollywood normally take the gamble on. And I think that's why I liked the movie.
Well, that fits in with what I described before, saying that this was originally a film called The Cellar, and it was brought in as part of and made part of the Cloverfield universe. It almost feels like, okay, so the first film is all the way through to getting out of the bunker, and then, all right, smack bang, the threat is actually alien invasion, and what if the big creature was our biggest gun against cities that we dump on cities? That's the way I'm kind of interpreting it.
Oh, really?
In the first film? So the big dinosaur thing, whatever it is, because there are scenes in the original Cloverfield where they're running around the sewers and there's these little creatures chasing them, little by comparison.
Oh, okay, so like...
I don't know this, because I've not looked it up, but they're not the same creatures that are chasing her later on, right?
I certainly didn't recognize them. She does get terrorized by a penis-y looking kind of thing at some stage, which is obviously a minion or something. It's not the main thing.
Yep.
No, I never thought of it like that. Because they were sort of using sort of some sort of chemical agent to actually eradicate the humans.
Yes.
I thought that would be their precursor thing, not dropping it.
Yeah, why didn't they do that over the city? That's a good question.
Right, so that's...
Look, that could be different waves of the same invasion, because they're in Louisiana, and New York is this massive city of, 10 million, 8, 12 million people, whatever it is?
Potentially.
Although you're right, it would make more sense to spray...
To spray a city, rather than... Yeah, so who knows why that happened, but I think the fact that they went ahead with that and did that at the end, and you don't have a lot of time to process that.
No.
And that's on purpose.
And what it is true to, and what I think works, is the very end of the film, which I won't spoil, but I think is true to her character.
I agree. And in fact, that was actually...
It feels like a proper arc.
Yeah, that was a good way to end it.
Yep.
Are you saying that you think that the ending bit with the aliens was tacked on as a result of this now becoming a Cloverfield
feels
thing?
Feels kind of like it.
Because, that would disappoint me, because if it just ended the way before that... It wouldn't be a movie that I remember.
Let's say, as the film The Cellar, she gets out and everything's okay.
Yeah, that's not a good ending.
Oh, well, yeah, she survived. And as a film on its own, had it been marketed completely differently and whatever, that it would be fine. It's worth seeing, but it's kind of hard to recommend because some people will fucking hate the
last 15 exactly. Minutes. Someone will come back to you and go, what the fuck with that shit?
Yeah.
So it is it's a tough one. Yeah. I still think it should be seen, and I'm hoping that if you've heard us talk about this, you have seen it.
Yeah, there we are. 3 stars for both of us. 6 out of 10 for the countdown for 10 Cloverfield Lane. Let's get into a countdown.
Let's do it.
This is Jason from Pat and Jason Have a Podcast. Every season, we have a different movie theme, and in season one, our theme is famous movie franchises. Franchises like Rocky, Star Wars, The Matrix, Indiana Jones, Jurassic Park, and more. We rank and review the best and the worst. We want you to pick our theme for season two. So subscribe today to Pat and Jason Have a Podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, or your favorite app. And follow us on Twitter at Pat and Jason. Tell us what movies we should be talking about and send us your reviews to be included on the show.
News on the march!
The year 2014. Two best friends set out on a journey to produce the best content related to all things film. In 2015, they founded a podcast to share their passions with the world. From rants, lisps, and beer, to trailers, challenges, and premieres, Nick and Justin have you covered. Find the Epic Film Guys podcast at epicfilmguys.podbean.com and follow the show on Twitter. And we'll see you at the movies.
Our countdown for today is a list of films that are predominantly set in a single location, inspired, of course, by 10 Cloverfield Lane. And I think we have a couple of bits to say about how we chose this, because this wasn't easy.
No, and you know what? You think to yourself, oh, there's a million movies like this. There may be lots, but there's not that many good ones, is what I found through my research.
Well, I found that there's a lot that I would have put straight onto this list, but, then they kind of, like, Clerks from Kevin Smith.
Yep.
It's predominantly set in the Quickie Mart, Quickie Stop, whatever the fuck mm-hmm. it's called, but then they go to a funeral at one point, so it kind of...
This is it. I think the way that I put it together, and this is an important point, because on my list, I've got a bunch of movies which would normally be maybe higher on the list, but they're less like, for me, a single location is as close to as possible to a single set.
Yep.
Uh-huh. You know? Now, a lot of movies, they start with a few outside scenes, and then for like 90% of the movie, it's one set.
Yeah, and I've got a few of those in mind, I have to admit.
Yeah, and then even still, you've got other movies where technically it's in one location, but there are heaps of different sets.
Like Die Hard or The Raid.
The Raid, yep. You know, that's one technically one, you know, building block, but there's tons of rooms in there.
Yes, yep.
So for me, the closer it got to a single set, the higher it went on the list if it was a good movie.
Fine, that's why you chose to order it, yep.
Yeah, and so even my number 10 is a little bit of like, there's quite a few sets in this, but it was a single location movie, and I loved it. So, you know, we'll see how it goes.
Okay. My number 10 then, because I'm going first,
mm-hmm.
yep, is a film that probably least fits this criteria, I will acknowledge.
Yep.
Because it's set in a subterranean cavern system.
Okay.
But I wanted to mention it because it's not a film I haven't mentioned at all, I don't think, and I certainly don't mention very often on this podcast, and it's wonderful. It's Neil Marshall's The Descent.
Yeah, I knew you'd put this in there. Yeah.
So it's probably the least, fits the criteria the least, in that you could argue, well, it takes place over a huge terrain.
No, but spiritually, it's enclosed.
But it's in one... Yes. I mean, yes, it starts. There's one little accident at the start. Then they're in a cabin, and then they get to the subterranean caves, and that's where we spend the rest of the film, apart from, depending on which version of the film you've seen, a dream sequence.
Yeah.
And I think it's just an amazing claustrophobic horror film.
I've not seen this movie because I'm scared like a bitch.
If we were still doing Unbelievable... this would be one I would set you because this is a fantastic horror movie.
All right.
So that's my number 10.
Nice one. My number 10, as I said, is a little left of right with regard to the rules, but it is Blake Edwards' The Party.
Never seen it.
You haven't seen The Party?
Hmm.
Dude, this is class. This
I wasn't
is the...
invited.
Oh, good one. Okay, check it out, right?
Sorry.
It's fine. It's a Wayne Level joke. Yeah. So this is a Peter Sellers movie from back in like 1968, okay? It's a comedy, right? It's basically Peter Sellers is an actor playing Gunga Din, and for some reason, he gets invited to this party full of Hollywood bigwigs, and it's a amazing house.
Okay.
He then goes on to have comic capers all the way through the movie, and it is... I remember seeing this when I was a kid, but I saw it again later on, and it held up, because it's just amazingly funny, and it's really, really... the fact that it's enclosed is not a feature of this movie. It's just in one house.
It's just in this house.
Yeah, in one house. But, man, you really need to see this. I mean, I don't know, because then you'll be all like, it was gay, man, it sucks. But I don't know. We'll
I'm
see.
Not sure I use those exact words.
Yes, you wouldn't say that exactly, yeah. But no, it's a classic, and it's just one of those things that, right. You know, me and comedies, I love them.
My number 9 might be one that's on your list. Mm-hmm. It is Phone Booth.
Oh, yeah, it's on my list.
Yeah, directed by Larry Cohen, I believe, and starring Colin Farrell, Kiefer Sutherland, Katie Holmes, and Ryder Mitchell.
Oh, and
Forest Whitaker.
Yes.
Top of my head. And it's a film basically about this sleazeball dude who's got a nice wife, but he's cheating on her with this young woman, and this kind of anti-hero might be stretching a little bit, but this bloke who takes it upon himself to take people to task who are like this guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so he picks up the last public phone booth in New York City or something or other,
mm-hmm.
and he answers the call, and it's the Kiefer Sutherland's voice anyway, mm-hmm. basically saying to him, if you leave this phone booth, I will shoot you. I have a sniper rifle trained on you.
Yep.
And he proves that to him very quickly in the film, and then has him admit his infidelity and his assholishness to a series of people through the course of the film
yep.
that brings into question whether or not he's a killer, so the cops all turn up and turn into a bit of a siege film. It's all set in and around this one phone booth.
It's amazing. I remember, this is low, man, on this film.
Really?
I reckon it is. This is a, when I saw this movie, because there's a Joel Schumacher movie, yeah?
Oh, sorry, I said it was I think Larry Cohen might have written it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, yes.
That's right. So Colin Farrell, you know, one of his earlier roles, as you said, is set, although it's set in Times Square, kind of,
mm-hmm.
it's all predominantly this scene around this movie, and this, you know, the few feet around the phone box. And it's enthralling. I never thought I would be so intrigued or entertained by this type of thing, but the stuff that, the places it goes and what he does and Colin Farrell's performance is really top notch, I reckon.
Yeah, it was kind of what the film that put him on the map
Well, Minority Report is where he seemed to break out.
Was that before this?
I don't know.
Anyway, but, it was around this time.
Yeah. But no, Phone Booth is fucking great and it's definitely going to hit my list.
Okay.
Okay. My number 9 is a movie which, and this is a bit of a nostalgia call, but it's Clue.
Wow.
Now, Clue is a movie that was based on a board game called Clue or Cluedo, depending on which part of the world you're in.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we called it Cluedo over here. It's basically part chamber mystery, whodunit, and almost like a haunted house kind of throwback. Well, first of all, it's one of the few movies that successfully recreated a board game. I know they're trying that Battleship and stuff now. Forget that. But it's again, I love it because it's funny. And it's actually a really good ride to jump around with, and it does take place, again, in quite a big mansion, but it's one house, technically.
Yeah, that's fine.
Tim Curry is kind of the lead. He's the butler.
Yep.
Okay? And so the whole movie, you're actually wondering who did what, who kills what, where, and that sort of thing, but it's done in such a funny way that you're entertained the entire time. So Clue is, I don't know, it's actually one of my secret favorites.
Okay. I don't remember it being that funny, but it's been a long time since I've seen it.
Again, it could easily be, I haven't seen it in a long time either, so it's like nostalgia.
I do remember it being clever. Because it's the first film I can remember where it has multiple endings.
Yes!
And it basically says to you, like, okay, here's one way it could have ended.
Yep.
Here's another way it could have ended. And here's a third way it could have ended.
But then it says, here's how it actually happened.
So, okay, all right.
So that's what's cool. It actually did pick one. So it used all those things and had its cake and ate it.
Yeah, all right. My number 8 is a very little known film. And originally, at this spot in the countdown, I had Paranormal Activity.
Mm-hmm.
Which is exclusively set in one house.
Right.
And it's all a security footage stream and the video camera they set up to record themselves while they're sleeping stream.
Mm-hmm.
But I decided that I'd like to announce this little independent film, which is far smaller. Well, actually, far smaller is the wrong words because Paranormal Activity is the definition of a sleeper, tiny little independent hit. But a film called My Little Eye, directed by Mark Evans from 2002.
Which
stars a very young Bradley, not stars, features a very young Bradley Cooper. It's a film about six people who have been picked to go on a reality TV show where they have to stay for 6 months and none of them are allowed to walk out, otherwise none of them get the $1 million prize each. So they have to live together for 6 months and they've obviously picked six people who will rub each other the wrong way and they want people to break down and have to leave. That's the premise of the film. I'm getting better.
Nice one, Mama.
Interestingly, though, it doesn't turn out to be that way. Bradley Cooper turns up early in the film. You know, they're in an isolated sort of place in the middle of nowhere. He turns up and sleeps with one of the girls because he's Bradley Cooper.
Yeah, of course, sure.
And then he leaves again, and it all turns out to be this.
Is he one of the contestants?
No, he's not.
Oh, he just turns up.
Yeah, literally. Because that's in the middle of nowhere, this house.
Right.
They provide them with food and whatever, but it turns out that this is a complete snuff website.
Oh.
And they've sort of let them build up this point, and they're getting subscribers in, and
wow.
Then they start getting killed off, and Bradley Cooper's part of it. The cop who turns up later is part of it. And they start, and even one of the contestants in the house is part of it. And that's all part of the reveals and the shocks.
Really? So, this sounds quite interesting.
It's 14 years old, and I know I'm spoiling the fuck out of it, but if you haven't seen it in 14 years, you don't give a shit. So, including you, you're not going to go and watch this. No. But it's one location, it's intriguing, and it's one of the better... It's not even found footage, that's not the right word, but streaming footage horror films.
Oh, for 14 years, films, okay.
Full stop.
All right, that's an interesting choice. My number 8 is a movie called, do you remember this one? Identity. It was from 2003. You're wondering because...
Does it fit the criteria?
It's set largely in a motel room, but they flash back to a hospital. So I know. This is the... Yeah. Look, it's an iffy one.
I think this is the most contentious.
I will tell you it's an iffy one.
So far, yep.
But the thing... I guess what I remembered about it was that it's John Cusack's in it and stuff like that. And basically all these strangers come together in a motel room and...
Rebecca De Mornay
is in it, yep.
Pruitt-Taylor Vince...
Yeah, that's right, those guys there. And I'm not going to spoil this one in case you check it out. But I will say that what I felt when I saw this movie is because basically what happens, all these characters are in a room or in a motel, and they kind of fall one by one.
I do like this movie, I'm a little...
I understand.
I'm not having to go, I'm just saying I'm a little antsy about the criteria.
That's fine. I will say that the ending of the movie made me wonder whether I liked it or not based on how much I cared about the characters. I'll say no more than that. It's a thriller slash... it's not a horror by any means, but it's kind of...
No, there's some horror elements to it.
Yeah, there's some horror elements to it. So
it's like 10 Little Indians.
That's why it was a big thing for me, because I don't like those movies and I liked this one. So, Identity 2003, see if you like it if you haven't seen it already.
Okay. I'm going back to the oldest film I've ever included on a countdown, at least for number 7. It's Alfred Hitchcock's Rear Window from 1954.
Sure.
Wonderful movie about a injured photographer who basically is stuck in his apartment watching what takes place during a very hot summer in the apartment building across from him, and he comes to believe that one of his neighbors murders his wife and tries to get his girlfriend and his nurse in to help him with that, but no one kind of believes him. They all think he's paranoid, and how the film unfolds from there.
I haven't seen a lot of Hitchcock ones, but the ones that I see, you know, if you can put yourself back in that time, this shit is brilliant. It's like the first time these things are done.
Jimmy Stewart as the as the main character in it. You know, for that time, again, you have to kind of go, oh, this is 1950s.
Absolutely.
He's great. The film is great from that perspective, and thoroughly recommend it. I mean, it's been aped so often, right down to Shia LaBeouf being in Disturbia.
Yeah, I was wondering if they had remade. Is it remade or is it just like sort of...
Oh, it's a reimagining. Homage, I think that's probably the way you would call that film.
Yep. Okay, good. My number 7 is The Hunt for Red October.
Yeah,
because it's primarily, I would say, 80 to 90% in a thing. What was outside?
Don't we get like the opposite side of the conflict a fair bit?
You see like shit getting fired at the submarine.
Don't we get water? Nothing else. It's just the Russian point of view.
At the end, Alec Baldwin gets into the sub at some... Like, the setup.
But how do we get to Alec Baldwin getting into the sub?
Yeah.
Don't we follow his character?
The setup at the beginning, but primarily it's in one spot, surely. Surely! Really?
Whoa.
Okay, would you say Crimson Tide is much like this? Because Crimson Tide also has shit going on outside.
Well, it's closer, I think, to the mark than this.
Really?
Don't we follow... Okay, so we've got Sean Connery as the Russian commander.
Yeah.
And we've got Alec Baldwin on the American side trying to avert a nuclear catastrophe. Doesn't it follow both of them?
For a short time until they get together.
And then they get together. Yeah, but when does they get together? At what point in the film?
Isn't that like the first quarter,
Half the way through?
No, not half the way through.
Still, it's a lot of action happening elsewhere.
I seem to remember the whole thing happening on a damn plane. on the sub. Ooh, okay. Ooh. Sorry if that one doesn't hit the mark.
I didn't see this on anyone's list anywhere.
Okay, I saw it on the list.
You did?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. But then again, I've seen a lot of ones that I don't agree with. Okay, look. It was
Edward Spotwood, 777, is not a real internet critic.
Who's that? Oh, yeah, no. No. This was... All right, we'll go ahead with this one, but
Crimson Tide, I think, is more so, although we do still finish...
To me, they're like kin.
We start off the sub.
Yeah, they're not even in the sub.
Look, predominantly it is Crimson Tide is in the one sub. Yep.
Okay, all right.
So I never considered, because that would totally be on my list if that was considered a...
Oh, really?
Yep.
Okay, all right, well, perhaps I was a cheat on that one. Sorry, folks.
Okay. My number 6 is a film that takes place exclusively in one house and then for one small scene at the very end on the lake next door to the house.
Mm.
It is a foreign film from Michael Haneke, or Haneke, Funny Games, which was remade into an American, not shot for shot, but very close remake with Naomi Watts and Tim Roth in it a few years later. But I'm going with the original because it was so shocking and out of...
I saw this on a lot of folks' list. I haven't seen it.
Yeah, it's pretty harrowing and nasty and horrible film.
Hence why I haven't seen it.
Yeah, not a film you'd watch if you want to feel good about life and yourself and everything else. But if you want to watch a film which pushes the boundaries in terms of what you'll accept as a viewer.
Yeah.
Not in a, like, overly graphic kind of way.
What's this setting?
So it's basically a film about two young men who are effectively psychopaths who home invade a small family's home and terrorize them.
Horrible.
And deal with them as the film progresses. It features a scene, which I will say this, which tells you a lot about Michael Haneke as a director. At one point, Naomi Watts picks up a gun that they've casually discarded and blows one of the intruders away. And the other intruder says, no, this doesn't happen in this kind of movie. Grabs a remote control, presses rewind, and the film rewinds. It happens again, and they stop her from blowing him away.
What the fuck?
Yeah, so it completely breaks the fourth wall. It's a huge commentary about what we'll accept as violence in a film and when it's okay for films to be so violent.
It didn't take you out of the movie?
Well, of course it did, but that's the whole point.
No, but like, it's in a good
way? Make you reflect in a, like, a, why am I so not okay with that,
so
but
you
it's
get
okay
it.
With her blowing him away?
Ah, that is interesting.
Mm.
Okay, I'm still watching it, but that's interesting.
Okay.
All right, okay. My number six is a movie that you yourself, sir, dragged me to, and I enjoyed. It's an indie as hell movie called Cube.
Mmm.
Okay.
Way higher on my list.
I knew it would be on your list. Okay, we should talk about it now.
Way higher.
Cube is a movie which had no names in it, and it was literally set on a single, well, set,
which
they lit differently.
Yes,
yeah, they lit differently
time.
And did a little CGI and that sort of thing, but basically all the actors and the characters were technically in the same room. And it's like that for the whole fucking
six
movie.
Or seven strangers come together, they wake up in this cube-like room and don't know why they're there and realize that there's an exit in every face of the cube and have to decide which way to proceed. Five out of six of those exits feature a trap that will kill whoever goes into the room first.
That's right. And you, the people who are in the room are seemingly ragtag and random, but it soon comes to light that they each have something to contribute.
And for me, the thing that's really amazing about this movie is how the characters start is not how they... I mean, apart from being alive or dead, but it's not how they finish. So the guy who initially seems heroic ends up being this conniving asshole.
Yeah.
And the girl who's particularly, like, contemptible and, like...
That was the best thing about the movie.
And, like, meh, ends up rising to the challenge. And so everybody changes if they survive long enough.
They fuck with you, which is good. So, yeah, okay, Cube.
And made for $375,000 Canadian, where they blew the vast majority of that budget on the opening special effect.
Which paid off, because it was, oh my God, when it happened. Yeah.
Magnificent movie. I love it. For its budget, for its time, for its premise, even for the way the character arcs happen. I mean, some of the acting is a little ropey, but...
Yeah, I mean, you can tell they're all, you know, not...
Yeah, but for what it was... An amazing movie.
I agree. And it's one of the few times I've really dug an indie. So.
Yeah, if you're a champion of indie film, then this is one you must see.
Yep.
My number five is probably the highest concept or the most literal version of this single location film. It is 2010's Ryan Reynolds starring Buried.
Now, this movie I wanted to get along to, but I thought I just wouldn't be happy.
It's so hard to watch.
Is it hard? Yeah, that's
it's
why.
It's a film about an American who wakes up in a coffin.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole film is him in this coffin. And will he or won't he get out? And the film ends with that answer.
So there's no cutaways to outside the coffin?
Everything,
that's very brave.
Everything is... He's got a mobile phone, which somehow has charge or signal, however low he's buried in the earth, which is bullshit. But all right, let's just get past that conceit of the plot. Everything is just voice acting apart from him. He's the only person in this movie.
Now, is he good?
He's great. He rises to the challenge, I have to say.
Yeah.
And even the director does a pretty good job of making it visually interesting, given this is a bloke in a box.
Yeah.
Because there's only so many ways you can film.
No kidding. That's why I was intrigued.
And it's short, which it needs to be, because it's kind of intense, but yeah. There we go.
Buried. Okay. My number five is The Hateful Eight.
Yep.
You know, because despite its talkiness at the very first half, well, not first half, the beginning bit, it was really, really good.
First 40 minutes or so, when they're not at the place they get to, they're on the way there, so I can buy that. That's fine.
Yeah, that's fine. Okay, it's in. So, yeah, Hateful Eight. We already talked about it, so no point crapping on
it. It would have got very close to my list, I have to admit, too, if I kind of just jettisoned it, because A, we talked about it,
and yeah.
B, it's like, yeah, maybe the first 40 minutes, rule it out. My number four is another classic. We're going all the way back to, I think, 85 here. with The Breakfast Club.
Holy shit, this is on your list?
Yeah.
It is on my list.
Oh, you're so surprised.
I am. You don't like fucking nice shit. You like nasty shit. Oh my god.
This is probably as close as we get to being...
Paul picked a John Hughes movie, yeah, everyone.
We weren't quite at this age where they were. We're not that old.
We weren't, but...
But we were 3 or 4 years later old enough to appreciate where they were.
Let me tell you, maybe one year ago, I went to a screening of this.
Did we go together or did I watch it, with other people myself?
I think you watched it with other people at the same thing. But it was an amphitheater, and it was one of those cool nights where I turned up and tons of people I knew just turned up. And I was, oh shit, you're here too. And I don't know if it was a setting or whatever else, but this movie held up like a motherfucker. Yep. We were all, like, punching the air at the end.
I want to be an airborne
I hated that song because some asshole in high school kept fucking singing it. But, you know, the whole thing was great. And you know what? Bridget had never seen it.
This
was the first time last year she saw it. And she said, oh my god, that's great. I'm like, yeah, you haven't seen it? Huge. So, that was big. Right, The Breakfast Club.
Coming up on your list then?
Yeah, big time.
Yes, alright. So, that's my number four. Your number four, sir.
Okay, my number four is, not to repeat myself, but This Is the End. This Is the End? Fuck off. This is definitely in one thing.
When do they bust out of the house?
They bust out, like, fucking what? 20 minutes from the end. 20 minutes, man! 20 minutes!
That's a lot of time.
Oh, kiss a ball. The first bit is the only other set, really, from that, other than that and the bit at the end, is them in the shop.
All right, I'll let it pass just because of my number three.
Really?
Which is not 20 minutes from the end. It's more like 7, but okay.
Nah, this is a mostly single location movie. Come on! Nah, kiss my ass. I'm down on this. I'm standing for arm. All right, fine.
You're standing with your cock erect.
I am. Yep. I'm slapping your face with it.
Well, tell us why it was good.
Tell me why it was good, because it's like one of the best comedies I've ever seen. I mean, the feature is not that it was something that kept your interest or this or that. It was a piss-funny comedy, and it happened to be in mostly... one room or one set.
Yeah, that's fair. It's mostly in one house.
Okay, yeah.
My number three is also mostly in one supermarket.
Oh, of course this is on your list.
It's The Mist, directed by Frank Darabont from a novella by Stephen King. It is one of my favourite horror movies of all time. Mm-hmm. I just mentioned it earlier today on the Epic Film Guys podcast where we were talking about films that I gave 4.5 stars to. Well... here it is.
Fair to say, The Mist was a good movie. Yeah.
You watched it for an unbelievable. I did. And I think you gave it 3 stars, which is pretty good for you.
Yeah, and for a guy who doesn't like these movies, definitely good.
Mist rolls over a town, bunch of people trapped inside a supermarket, start being menaced by whatever is in the mist, and we don't really know what it is, but we just know it's many-clawed and many-pronged.
And very nasty.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, man. Number three for me was The Breakfast Club.
Yeah, that's right. Four and three, we're right, right there, pretty close to one another.
Not bad.
My number two is another one that you will have known was coming up in my list.
Mm-hmm.
It's The Thing, directed by John Carpenter. Of course,
and this is one of my honourable mentions.
Yeah, it's set in one, virtually one. Okay, they do fly off and to check out where the ship is.
That's
at one point in the film, but otherwise it's entirely set on this one Antarctic research base and... where they are set upon by an alien that can mimic any life that it touches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the greatest horror films ever made, one of the greatest studies in paranoia, one of the most tension-filled films.
I would agree completely. For me, the feature of the film is not that it's in one room, it's just that it's good.
Not one room, it's one base.
Yeah. So that's the only reason I left it off. But
it's not a big base, not like something like, say, Die Hard, which I left off my list because it's 40 stories of
Just like The Raid Redemption.
The Raid Redemption could have been on it. If you were going that wide, it kind of had to cap it somewhere.
Precisely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, my number two has been mentioned. It's Phone Booth. That's where I put it.
Wow.
Yeah, man. This movie was great. I can't believe you put it so low. I can't believe you put it so low. Didn't we love the shit out of this movie?
You loved the shit out of it. I thought it was pretty decent.
I had a great time with this movie.
And my number one, you've also stolen the thunder of. It is Cube.
Wow, at number one.
Well, because it's the best example of a single. Okay, it's not in the film. They climb through different rooms, but it's the one setting. Literally, this entire film takes place in one room, in terms of shooting.
Yeah, I know. It's actually the one that the best example of it. Yes.
I mean, it's not as good a film as The Thing or The Mist, so if I was ranking it in terms of the best films, that would be different, but I'm tired of putting The Thing and The Mist in the top of my list. This is the best example of a one-location
film. Yep, I would agree with that. I would absolutely agree with that. And now I'm really nervous about my number one, hitting the criteria on that basis. My number one is Glengarry Glen Ross.
No, I can't remember the film enough, but I know it mostly takes place
in an office. It absolutely mostly takes place in that office, and it's all about performances. A particular highlight for me is Alec Baldwin's ass-kicking. He's such a prick, but he kills it.
Mm-hmm.
The only bits that are outside on this movie, I think, from memory, are Jack Lemmon does visit someone's house to try and make a sale, and there's a few phone booth scenes where he's outside there, but primarily all the drama happens in that office. This is just a great fucking movie, man. Like, I think that first time, it's 1992, this movie, so I was still in high school. And it's the first time that I remember going, this is pure performance and I love it.
Mm. Okay.
And, you know, there you go. So that's it, there, man. That's my number one.
Any honorary mentions?
My honorary mentions were The Thing, and I don't know if this is Reservoir Dogs I put on there, but I only made it honorable mention because I'm not sure it quite
hits
the
I wanted to include it in one sense, which is it's mostly in one location, but I read a lot online. This topic has come up online.
Is it?
Certainly in Reddit, it was shat all over. It's, nope, there's like 9 different scenes that don't take place.
The cafe.
Yes, they're flashbacks. They're whatever. Or the cafes at the start.
Yeah, that's what it was. The flashbacks. When he's learning to be
a... I thought, you know what? I've talked about it enough. Don't need to include it again.
Fair enough.
I didn't have any really honorary mentions. I was pretty happy with this 10 list,
yeah,
to be honest. So straight to then Twitter. I didn't put it wide like I normally do on Twitter because I just wanted to keep it a little bit... succinct for this particular episode. One person got back to the question I just asked and didn't pin to our profile, and if I pin it, we get lots of responses. Mm-hmm. But What the Fork Show at My WTF Show said Panic Room with Jodie Foster. Have you seen this movie, Wayne?
I haven't, even though it's a Fincher movie and I should get along to it. I just missed it.
Yeah, you absolutely should see this film. It's a good film. I agree, and it's predominantly set inside Jodie Foster's house, mm-hmm, and not just the Panic Room, of course, but the house around it. So, yeah, well worth a look. And thank you for that nomination, good sir.
So, for next week, folks, we are going to do a countdown of our top 10 plot twists in movies. And don't worry about some spoilerific shit happening. We're not going to do movies that are particularly new or anything like that. We are going to give sort of like classics and that sort of thing.
Yeah, nothing in the last couple of years, but anything before that will be fair game, which case you've probably heard about if you haven't already seen it.
Yep.
And then the week after is our year anniversary special. We've got a few things maybe on the boil, but most importantly, we are going to be reviewing Batman vs. Superman, Dawn of Justice, to Wayne's absolute glee. And we will be having the Batman-Superman expert, or the rivalry expert, because we're also going to be doing our top 10 best film rivalries.
That's right. Can we just say his name?
Yeah, it's Alejandro.
Alejandro, of course. Yeah, anytime we say expert anything, it's Alejandro.
He is an expert of everything, and he loves that title.
Continually like, can you quit calling me a fucking expert? So.
So that's our next two shows, and then we'll be moving from there into the month of April. More about that next week. But Wayne, how do people get in contact with us?
Want to see us on Facebook? Just search for the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast on Facebook. Or if you want to send us an old email, it's thecountdownpodcast@gmail.com.
If you would like to follow us on Twitter, where we have passed, I'm proud to say, at episode 50 mark, 2,500 followers.
Boom!
We are at The Countdown PC. You can also follow us and or like us on Podomatic, where we host all of our episodes. That really helps, thanks to the couple of people who have done that over the last couple of weeks. And you can also, of course, subscribe, rate, and review us on iTunes, which is probably the most important one. It helps us get out to a wider audience and for more people to listen to our podcast, which is, you know, kind of the goal. And finally, a big shout out to hashtag Pod and Family, a whole group of wonderful independent podcasts that have come together to help promote one another. If you're looking for another show to listen to beyond us, the Epic Film Guys, Something Something Podcast, check out them. And one of those shows I would recommend is most definitely the Classic Little Podcast.
Oh, yeah.
This week, they have asked us to do a little segment for them. You can hear us over just for 5 or 6 minutes over on their show. But it's a great podcast, regardless of whether we're there or not. Also, please listen to the Open All Powers podcast, your source for all things that are really particularly geeky when it comes to movie, film, TV, more so even than us. Because
geekier than us.
They talk about comics as well. They have their finger on the pulse.
Wow.
They're a couple of great guys. Special shout out to Locomotive, who I've been communicating with on Twitter, and we may well have a crossover show with them in future. And we've already mentioned Epic Film Guys and Something Something Podcast, a couple of great shows as well.
All right. Well, thank you very much for staying with us again, folks. We always love having you aboard. Until next week, my name is Wayne.
My name is Paul.
Talk to you soon.
Cheers.
your guide to cinema etiquette from the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast. Tip 43.
When attending the cinema with your good friends or significant other, don't assume anyone else has any interest in what you have to say. So, always remember...
Whisper, fuckface. It's not rocket science. For more useful cinema etiquette, join Paul and Wayne on the Countdown Movie and TV Reviews podcast at Podomatic on iTunes or your favorite podcast app.